Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rough Justice by Joanna Campbell Slan. Narrated by M. Eldridge. Prologue. She struggled to breathe through her mouth, but she could only gasp for air. Her pillow was mashed tightly against her face, pressing her nose to one side, pinching her nostrils closed. Amazing that feathers could be packed together so tightly that air could not move through them. But they were. Sad how the Egyptian cotton she'd chosen for its high thread count actually kept her from sucking in the oxygen her body craved. She squirmed. There was weight behind that pillow. The entire body mass of her killer exerted pressure. Death was coming, and she welcomed it. The burning in her lungs couldn't go on forever. The pain in her throat would end. She knew this to be true. But what was that compared to the pain she'd carried in her heart for 30-some years? This would be short-lived. How ironic that word was. That other pain she had carried with her, day in and day out, while calculating how much responsibility she bore. That was the worst pain ever, because it was multiplied by shame and embarrassment 1,000 times over. The hot rush of urine flooded the V-shaped space formed by her legs and ran between her thighs. She could feel humiliation, but really, what did it matter? What was a little pee when you were dying? Hardly a big deal. Her body fought back. Of course it did. Deep in her brain, that primitive remnant, the brainstem, went berserk. It fought to be heard, to be nourished, to stay alive. That was its job. She couldn't control the convulsions, the spasms, the heaving. An involuntary response took the helm, even as her logic kicked in. The sensate part of her brain kept saying, "It is a matter of time. Hang on, not long now. Must carry on. This can't take long, not in my condition. This will be the last misery ever visited on me. After this, I'll be gloriously free." But her corporal self still fought back. She'd always been a strong woman, a person who didn't give up, and high stakes were her natural arena. Sadly, the time for resistance was over, long gone. Her hands grabbed at the mattress cover. She struggled to pull her arms loose, to get them out so she could claw at her killer. But they were pinned beneath the bottom sheet and the thin institutional blanket. Instinct demanded that she fight, because her life was at stake. And what could possibly matter more? Nothing, not one thing. Wasn't that what she'd learned in anthropology class? The two strongest instincts were species preservation and self-preservation. Of course her body fought this. Of course it did. But her killer was too clever. The assailant scooted, positioning both knees on the sheets and trapping her arms. Now she could smell, faintly as the pillow slip blocked much of it, the sharp stink of nervous sweat. Her killer was having to work hard, perhaps unexpectedly so. Now with the assailant right on top of her, she responded to the danger on a deeper level. One entirely out of her control. A lack of oxygen sent her muscles into spasms. The top sheet functioned like a straitjacket, confining her arms, as her heels beat against the bottom sheet with gusto. Even as her physical self battled the inevitable end so desperately, her mind relaxed and let go, like a ship tethered to its mooring. The seas were too rough. The rope snapped at the cleat. And that little vessel that held her soul drifted away, moving closer and closer to the ocean and infinity. With a shudder, her last conscious thought was that she had foreseen this, or something similar. For decades, this had been her expectation. Her husband had poo-pooed her concerns, but that had been like refusing to believe in gravity. You could protest all you wished, but it didn't matter to gravity. It was immutable. Some things truly are inevitable. And this, being murdered in her own bed, was one of them. Chapter 1. Getting old isn't for sissies. Truer words were never spoken. Given that the average age of South Florida matrons is between mud and God, senior citizens are an everyday occurrence in my store, the Treasure Chest, located in downtown Stuart, Florida. My shop specialized in upcycled, recycled, and repurposed goods with a coastal theme. Fortunately, I hit a sweet spot when it came to marketing, and locals, as well as tourists, had taken a liking to my merchandise. I'd also managed to make my place appealing to shoppers of all ages, as my current guests, the elderly Brooke Porter Delahunty and her young caregiver Nina Stevens, were busy proving. Mrs. Delahunty used her new tripod cane as a stylish fashion accessory. Hers was a metallic hot pink, making it impossible to ignore. Seniors often rely on walkers, many with yellow tennis balls stuck on the bottom of the metal legs. Wheelchairs are a close second when it comes to senior mobility aids. Recently, canes with three prongs at the bottom have become popular, and that's an innovation that I applaud. Unlike the wheelchair and walker users, people with the enhanced canes can navigate narrow spaces. Plus, the tripod base offers better stability than a singular leg. Mrs. Delahunty leaned heavily on her cane, and Nina managed to stay close enough to grab her charge by the elbow if the older woman lost her balance. Unlike many caregivers, Nina never wore a bored or irritated look on her face. Clearly, she adored Mrs. Delahunty, and it was easy to see why. Of all my elderly customers, Mrs. Delahunty is one of the most delightful, and I always enjoy her visits. Mrs. Delahunty is unfailingly cheerful. That might not seem like a big deal, but a lot of our senior citizens seem to think that being old gives them a pass on being downright rude. I tell myself that maybe they don't feel well, can't hear, and can't see. But some of them simply see themselves as entitled and expect to be treated as such. Not Mrs. Delahunty. She will live and die a gracious lady, admired for her upbeat demeanor, her kindness, and her terrific good taste. I only hope that I'll look that good when I get her age. Her white hair looks terrific in its stylish bob that matches her classic clothing and understated makeup. When I first met Mrs. Delahunty and Nina, I thought they made an odd couple. Back then, Nina had dyed her hair green for St. Patrick's Day. Shall I say it was a daring choice? Indeed it was. Not only was the color visually shocking, but the chemical treatment must have been destructive, because a month after St. Patty's, most of Nina's hair had broken off. She looked like a chia pet, one of those terracotta figurines designed to grow chia sprouts in the place of hair. Nina must have learned a harsh lesson from that fashion faux pas. Today, she wears her naturally light brown hair in a flattering pixie cut. That's not the only change in her life. Back then, Nina had recently been hired as Mrs. Delahunty's part-time caregiver. This particular pairing really clicked. Very quickly, Nina became a full-time fixture at the side of the elderly matron. As we say in the Midwest, the two got along like a house on fire. The two women interacted more like grandmother and grandchild than a wealthy widow and her paid companion. Indeed, Mrs. Delahunty had told me just last week that she considered Nina her adopted daughter. That close relationship has been good for both of them, in countless ways, both large and small. Nina brought a zest for life that Mrs. Delahunty had forfeited long ago. The young woman's curious spirit and sponge-like absorption of the world around her encouraged Mrs. Delahunty to engage with life once more. In return, Mrs. Delahunty's refined sensibility has rubbed off on Nina. Each time I see the young woman, she seems a tad more polished and sure of herself. On this glorious day, the 1st of May, when we were enjoying 70-degree Florida weather and clear crayon blue skies, the two seemed particularly in sync. They ambled around, looking at my displays, with their heads nearly touching as they chatted. Nina has a naturally quick pace, but she's tempered it in response to Mrs. Delahunty's need to walk slowly. The young woman has also adjusted her posture. Whereas before, she walked slumped over, today Nina stands as straight as any dancer ever would. Similarly, Mrs. Delahunty has lifted her chin too. Before Nina, she had a downcast air about her. It's abundantly clear that they've been good for each other. "Nina and I are celebrating," Mrs. Delahunty told me as she gave the girl a one-armed hug. She took all of her exams last week and tested out of taking all the final exams but one, organic chemistry. And I'm positive she'll pass that with flying colors. That test is a week away. From then, it's only one more semester until she graduates. Then it's on to nursing school. Way to go, Nina. I marvel at the young woman's dedication. She was holding down a full-time job and going to school. That tired me out thinking about it. Mrs. Delahunty has helped a lot. She's my best study aid. Nina smiled at her elderly friend. You should hear her drill me on my subjects. I'm relentless. Mrs. Delahunty's grin signaled she was teasing. Even so, I could well imagine that the older woman pushed Nina toward excellence. They seemed to cling to each other emotionally, in a way that was respectful and appropriate. I found myself smiling at their happy relationship. What do you think? Nina had stopped at the carousel where we displayed our jewelry. She held up her wrist to show off one of our leather bracelets. Delahunty smiled as her young friend modeled the piece. With your camo pants? Or the new cargo pants? If you wear the cargo pants, you'll need a medium to dark-hued top. Although beige on beige is very on-trend, isn't it? Whatever you choose, I love pairing leather and organic pieces with casual clothes. Mrs. Delahunty smiled at Nina fondly. Fashion was a shared interest. Keeping up to date with changing styles amused Mrs. Delahunty, and that translated into better wardrobe choices by Nina. Our leather bracelets would look terrific on the young caregiver. They'd been designed with that age group in mind, and as such, we'd sold a lot of them to doting grandparents. Those seashells are collected from our local coastline. The stones were found on various area beaches. Sky blue makes the jewelry, I said, referencing my best friend. Sky's not only a pal and an ace employee, she's also a powerful creative force. Sky has a knack for turning cast-offs into wonderfully appealing merchandise, and I have the sales data to prove it. That said, I am worried about what will happen now that season is over. Down here in Florida, season is defined as the time from late September to Easter, when all the snowbirds, aka our tourists from up north, are visiting. This year, a cold snap up north had kept the snowbirds here a month longer than usual. Season marks the short selling period when our businesses turn a profit. If you don't make money during season, you might as well lock your doors and board up your windows. Once the snowbirds go home, you can only rely on local traffic to make your cash register sing. And that can be slim pickings. The treasure chest had a good Easter, a great St. Patrick's, and a terrific Valentine's Day. The question was, could I keep my business humming throughout the summer months? If I could cover my expenses, I'd be set for another year of trade. I had put away some money, and I was being careful with my expenditures. But still, I went to sleep each night and wondered every day what I'd need to do to keep the doors open. Nina's voice brought me back to the here and now. Sky's so talented. These are wicked. Nina gestured at our jewelry display with approval. In the parlance of her age group, wicked meant she liked what she saw. Very carefully, she hung the bracelet back on the rack. Nina and Mrs. Delahunty took their time looking around my store while I counted merchandise in our candle and scented oil department. Straightening and tracking inventory is a tedious part of owning a retail store, but it has to be done. Happily, I can do menial chores and eavesdrop, so the time goes quickly. I especially enjoy listening in on the discussions between Nina and Mrs. Delahunty. Mrs. Delahunty has lived a fascinating and glamorous life. As I understood it, Mrs. Delahunty had maintained a lifelong interest in fashion and design. Everyone said that the Delahunty home was a tribute to her good taste. Supposedly, she had decorated the house all by herself, which is unusual for a person of such wealth. Typically, rich folks hire a designer and then pretend to have done the decor themselves. "Kara, Nina's decided on this bracelet," Mrs. Delahunty sang out to me. "Coming." Putting down my clipboard, I hurried to the cash station.
"No, Mrs. Delahunty, don't," Nina protested. "Honest, just because I like something doesn't mean you need to buy it."
But Mrs. Delahunty had made up her mind. "It's my money, and I'll do what I want with it. What I want is to spoil you. I hope you will wear it in good health, Nina. We're celebrating your good test scores. This trinket will remind you that you can do whatever you put your mind to doing." I took the bracelet from Nina and rang it up. When I returned the credit card to Mrs. Delahunty, she looked over the receipt carefully. Once she was satisfied the charge was appropriate, she tucked the paper register tape into a clear zippered pouch in her purse. Painstakingly, she returned her credit card to a specific slot in her wallet. Most customers shove both into their handbags and forget about them. Not Mrs. Delahunty. As I wrapped the bracelet in tissue paper, I realized someone was missing. "Where's Mally?" I glanced around my store. Usually, Mrs. Delahunty's golden retriever was at her side, accompanying her mistress and the caretaker when they popped in and out of shops in downtown Stewart. Although Mally is fast becoming a senior citizen herself, she's very much an integral part of Mrs. Delahunty's life. Wherever Mrs. Delahunty goes, her dog goes too. "Mally is getting groomed at Pretty Pet. She's been shedding like crazy." Nina grinned. Her hazel eyes twinkled at the mention of Mrs. Delahunty's dog. One of the reasons that Mrs. Delahunty hired Nina was the girl's immediate bond with Mally. The dog is an important part of Mrs. Delahunty's life, and more than one caregiver had been rejected after taking exception to the amount of pampering that Mrs. Delahunty gives her pooch. Mally goes for regular walks. She eats organic food. She drinks only Fiji water. In short, the yellow dog leads a charmed life, even if you compare her existence to that of most human beings. "Tuesdays are senior discount days for Goldens, so we always bring in Mally on Tuesdays. The people at Pretty Pet do a nice job of grooming her, but I hate those ugly bandanas they put on poor Mally." Mrs. Delahunty frowned. "They must buy the material from the kids section of the fabric store. Disney characters are well and good, but not on my dog. Same with The Simpsons. The show is amusing, but the images are garish." "That's a good point, Mrs. Delahunty." I considered what she'd said, turning it over and over in my head. "Most dog scarves are pretty stupid looking, aren't they? If I had doggy bandanas sewn out of more expensive fabrics, would you be interested?"
"I certainly would. Mally needs an entire wardrobe of bandanas. How about one in a tropical print, another in a sedate damask, and perhaps a floral pink with a white cotton lace? Think of it, a variety of styles for every occasion," Mrs. Delahunty said. "Why, Mally would look wonderful in a camo scarf trimmed with leather and shells. Of course, you'd have to be careful about your price point.
Agreed. I did a mental calculation. $15 would be my upper limit. Is that about right?
Yes, I think so.
I'd never seen doggy bandanas in fashionable fabrics. Usually they're made in cheap and ugly remnants that could kindly be described as cute, with a huge emphasis on the quotation marks surrounding that one word. Looking at my calendar, I figured that I could have a new order of bandanas on my shelves in less than a week. I have an ace seamstress who works for my store, and she could whip up doggy neckerchiefs in no time at all. In fact, I would call her this evening and ask her to start work on the items. Mrs. Delahunty, Nina, if you two come back next week, I promise I'll have more options for you to consider. I am positive we can dress Mally in style. How's that for a plan? Mrs. Delahunty beamed at me.
That's wonderful. Absolutely spot on. Oh, Nina, we almost forgot to give Kara her invitation. Aren't we silly? Kara, we're having a small soiree at my house this coming Saturday to celebrate Mally's 10th birthday. I do hope you'll come. You're one of the first people we thought of when we decided to host this event. I know you're committed to rescuing animals. Seems that word had gotten around that I'm a sucker for homeless pets. Currently, I own two dogs, Jack, a white chihuahua who was tossed out the window of a truck, and Gerard, a royal Bahamian potcake. And yes, that is actually a breed of dog. In addition, I've been allowed to serve Luna, a stunning gray cat who has determined I'm her willing slave. Nina reached inside the backpack she carried for Mrs. Delahunty and withdrew an ivory envelope with my name written in a graceful script. The invitation was pure Brooke Delahunty. The notepaper had been embossed. A message in metallic gold invited me to Mally's birthday party, 4 days away. A smaller card tucked inside gave directions to the Delahunty home.
Mrs. Delahunty, I didn't realize you live on Jupiter Island. We're practically neighbors. I'm in the house that Mrs. Fingersmith used to own. At first, I couldn't believe the coincidence. Then I gave myself a mental dope slap. Of course Brooke Delahunty lived on Jupiter Island. The small community is home to many of the country's most prominent families, including such old guard names as the Bushes, Doubledays, and the DeWitts. Legendary golfers live there too, so one is apt to run into Tiger Woods and Greg Norman. Unlike Palm Beach, the residents of Jupiter Island prefer to keep their lifestyle low-key. They eschew glamour and glitz in favor of solitude and safety. I live on the island because my grandfather, Poppy, performed a myriad of good deeds for Mrs. Fingersmith. When she died, her son gave the little house to Poppy because the man hated the ocean. Absolutely hated it. I find that unbelievable, but who am I to question good fortune? Poppy rented it out for years. When I saw the place, I fell in love with it, and that was that. Mrs. Delahunty said,
"My goodness, Kara, you are just down the street. I wondered who'd moved into that little cottage. It's so charming."
I glanced at the invitation to check the address again. That's when I noticed that the card suggested that instead of bringing a gift for Mally, guests could make a donation to the local no-kill shelter. That was right up my alley.
"This is a splendid idea." I waved the cream-colored paper.
"I would be delighted to join you. Thanks for the invitation. Consider this my RSVP. I love no-kill shelters. Such a worthy cause."
"Kara, don't forget that a donation would be tax-deductible," said Mrs. Delahunty.
"I won't." Nina lifted a purple stick about the size of a pack of gum. "Kara Mia Delgado confirmed." Nina spoke into the stick, which was attached to a keychain. When she saw the quizzical look on my face, she said, "Voice-activated recorder. I use it for school, and when I have Mally on her leash." Smart idea. I admired the young woman's ingenuity. Mrs. Delahunty took the bracelet out of the shopping bag. Gesturing to Nina, she indicated that the younger woman should thrust out her arm. With trembling fingers, Mrs. Delahunty secured the bracelet to Nina's wrist. "There you go, sweet child. Enjoy." Nina planted a quick kiss on the side of Mrs. Delahunty's face.
"You're too kind to me. Honestly, Mrs. Delahunty, you spoil me."
"Harumph," Mrs. Delahunty grumped. "Someone should spoil you. You're a wonderful young lady. I'm lucky that you're a part of my life. Before you came along, I had a series of dreary women without the brains that God gave geese. You keep my mind humming along, Nina.
And you keep drilling me so that I pass my classes with flying colors. Kara, you should see how Mrs. Delahunty works with me. She quizzes me, reads flashcards, and so on. She is a stern taskmaster. I'm going to ace that organic chemistry test. I know I will."
"You'd better." Mrs. Delahunty wagged a finger at the young woman. To me, the older woman added, "Nina keeps me young. Honestly, she does. She's gotten me caught up on all the slang terms. Introduces me to TV programs I would never ordinarily watch. Helps me put on my face each morning. Takes Mally for long walks. Reads to me from her textbooks. Nina is my lifeline to the world. She goes out and reports back what she experiences, because I'm not as active as I once was. I truly think she's all that's keeping me alive."
All that's keeping me alive? Ugh. My immediate urge was to disagree with Mrs. Delahunty. None of us like to think about death and dying. Even the passing of a stranger can cause us to feel uneasy. My impulse was to pretend that Mrs. Delahunty was healthy as a horse, and that she would live many decades longer. But I knew better. Shortly before my father's mother died, she'd made a similar remark. Of course, I'd poo-pooed my grandmother's comment at the time, because I was young and couldn't imagine death. Since then, I've come to respect that older people can tell when their days are coming to an end. Nina's face clouded.
"Mrs. Delahunty, that's not true. Don't say such things. You're going to live for decades more. I know it."
"Piffle, child, piffle. I've lived a good life, a long life, traveled the world, indulged almost every desire. There comes the time for every actor to bow and walk off the stage. Mine is near."
Mrs. Delahunty must have once been a smoker, because she has that gruff whiskey and tobacco timbre to her voice. If I closed my eyes, I could pretend I was in a bar, listening to a jazz singer. Nina got a panicky look on her face.
"Mrs. Delahunty, don't talk like that. You're fine, just fine. I bet you'll outlive me by 50 years or more."
"That's highly doubtful," Mrs. Delahunty said. "Another 50 years? Nina, dearest, you're too smart for that. I'm not going to be blowing out 130 candles on a cake, dear heart. We both know I won't live forever."
This was my chance to step in and guide the conversation. "Mrs. Delahunty, I have to admit that living to 130 is unlikely, but Nina makes a good point. You're a lovely lady, and I hope you grace us with your presence for many, many years to come." I gave the woman's hand a gentle squeeze. "Is there anything I can bring to your party? Any food item?"
"Just bring yourself. Unless you want to be plus one. I already asked Tenora, and she can't make it. But perhaps you have a beau?"
I colored at that.
Recently, my love life has been dry as the Sahara Desert.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?